The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
On today's show, we have Mary Allenter Powell-Lafond. She's a former judge and also was the representative for children and youth. Powell-Lafond is of Cree and Scottish ancestry. She now teaches law at the University of British Columbia, where she heads up the University of British Columbia's Indian Residential School History and Dialogue Center. On Tuesday, she released her long-anticipated report on racism against Indigenous peoples in British Columbia's healthcare system. That investigation was launched after allegations that emergency room doctors and nurses were playing a betting game with Indigenous patients who came in to guess their blood alcohol limit. And although Mary Ellen did not find enough evidence about that specific allegation, she said what she found was far more troubling and widespread. And a note for our listeners, some of the aspects of our interview and the stories shared contain emotionally painful and sensitive topics. If you need help or are in crisis, we'll list the numbers at the end of the interview. Well, it's a great honor to have you back on our program, Mary Ellen Powell-Lafond.
Thank you. Nice to be back. I'm just really pleased that we were able to connect today because I, you know, I'm a real supporter of your program and Vancouver Co-op Radio. I always like to do it, so I'm glad I get to do it. Thank you.
When we had you on last, was in June, I believe, and you had just launched your probe into Indigenous healthcare racism in BC.
I think that's right. Yeah, that's true. I think it's been a few months. It feels like it was those few months seem like a long time because there's been a lot of work, but I'm happy to be back to talk a little bit about the findings of the report.
Sure. Before we get into those, I wanted to talk about who you talked to for this, because I understand it's quite a large group. I'm looking at the report now and you had 9,000 people who engaged, including nearly 2,800 Indigenous peoples and 5,500 health workers.
That's right. So during the summer months, between when we officially launched in July to when I started sort of writing the report, which would have been early November, we were engaged with more than 9,000 First Nations people, Métis people, a few Inuit as well, and of course, healthcare workers. My line, my 1-800 number and email, sort of open line, I had more than 600 cases came forward. And then I interviewed and engaged with about 150 of the key leaders and others who may have been connected to some of those cases across the healthcare system. And so it's been quite a process with a small team, but I really wanted to gather up as much as I could with respect to what is the experience of Indigenous people in BC's healthcare system. There was an allegation about a game being played, a allegedly racist game being played. I investigated that, but more significantly, I looked at the issue of how Indigenous people are being treated at the point of care, where they go to seek care, whether that's an emergency room, a doctor's office, a dentist, or what have you.
So the game that we talked about back in, I guess, June or May was allegedly that people were betting on alcohol content of patients. You didn't find any ability to say whether that happened or not, I guess.
Well, I investigated it thoroughly. And I found that there were some examples of where there's guessing blood alcohol level at emergency rooms. I didn't find an organized game called Price is Right, which is what had been alleged with sort of like prizes and so forth. I didn't find that. But what I did find was some of that sort of guessing. But more importantly, as I looked throughout the system and looked at all of the complaints and how things were working and what was coming in, I found that actually there were really rampant stereotypes that were operating that caused discrimination against Indigenous people at the point of care in BC's healthcare system.
I wanted to jump into some of the findings when you did a survey that kind of line up with that. 30% of Indigenous patients said that they felt their cultural traditions weren't appreciated. 26% said that they were assumed to be drunk or were asked about substance abuse. 24% were treated as though they were dishonest.
Yeah, I think what I found generally of all the Indigenous people I engaged with, about 84% said they'd experienced some form of discrimination. And you've just highlighted a few, like about, and again, I give a trigger warning because this is very triggering for Indigenous people that may be listening or Indigenous health professionals. And there is support available in the report. There's a couple of lines where you get some trauma support, because I did engage with a lot of traumatized people.
And we'll read those at the end of this too.
Oh, thank you so much. The top stereotypes that I found, like what the point of care, were really sort of 8 big stereotypes: that Indigenous people are less worthy of care, that they're drinkers or alcoholics, that they're drug seeking, bad parents, sometimes called frequent flyers, that they're non-compliant, that they're less capable, that they get stuff for free. And then there was a whole nother layer of really prejudicial and sexist opinions about Indigenous women being more sexually active, having more children, being more sexually available. And so those all went together. So those were the top sort of stereotypes that I found circulating in the healthcare system in BC, which were, you know, found pretty much in all regions at the point of care.
I know that we've had really just heartbreaking stories and concerns about, for instance, the story out of Quebec of Joyce Eshwakan, who died in hospital and was received some of the same kind of very racialized and sexualized comments right in front of her.
Yeah, I think that the shocking part about what we saw, what happened to Joyce Eshwakan in Quebec, was the fact that she had live streamed, you know, on Facebook, her treatment, because she was desperately reaching out to her family. So we overheard in real time some of the comments. But certainly what I found in British Columbia was, you know, these types of stereotypes do result in discrimination at the point of care, including many abusive interactions with the patient, which might be verbally or physically abusive, also result in ignoring and shunning and a denial of service, some medical mistakes, and inappropriate pain management. So I found the same, not exactly the identical behavior to what was FaceTime Live, but some of the similar views about Indigenous people that here in British Columbia in terms of the type of discrimination that's being experienced.
Now, this is very real world consequences. I think our health minister acknowledged that when he apologized. But I mean, just on one count on medications, people, when asked if they got medications they needed, Indigenous people said only 35% did, whereas almost double that for non-Indigenous respondents said they got the medication they needed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I tell the stories in the report about what happens. And I tell the story about an Indigenous woman who came into a larger hospital for surgery. She has brain aneurysms. And she, you know, told me about how when she woke up from her surgery in 2018, she didn't feel well. She felt like she was going to throw up. She called one of the nurses. And the nurses said, oh, you're going through withdrawal. It's from all the alcohol you people drink, and you just have to wait for your booze. And she didn't get assistance. Same thing happened when she had another surgery in 2019, because she has a chronic health condition. And they again made a comment that she, you know, you people drink too much and you're just recovering from alcohol. And which was not only incredibly stereotypical, but there's no evidence that this patient had any history of drinking too much. She had a brain aneurysm and she had surgery. And I use that as one. I mean, there's multiple stories I tell in the report. But this woman in particular is so fearful after 2 bad experiences that she doesn't want to have any more surgeries. And, you know, what she has is a treatable condition. But if she doesn't go to the hospital to get the care she needs, you know, her life might be shortened. And so you're right. It is very significant that people don't stop accessing care because they have been mistreated. So we have to improve the system.
In her story, she said that she was afraid of going to hospitals. How widespread was that?
Very widespread. I mean, I literally heard hundreds of examples of where people were afraid to go. And at first, you know, like anything, you're like, well, maybe this is like particularly dramatic reaction. Is this valid? But then as I heard the stories and looked at them, they were like pretty normal reactions to the kind of harsh, difficult treatment that they'd experienced. And none of us chooses to go get healthcare, like this type of, you know, healthcare and have surgery and so forth. But when in our moment of need, when we do go to get surgery, we need to be treated respectfully. And if people are being treated so awfully that they actually would rather, and many of them said to me, I'd rather die at home than get treated for this. That was really a concern. Or people said, you know, my mother, father, aunt, uncle, partner, refused ongoing treatment because the experience was so awful. Mm. And people made fun of us or had these key stereotypes, especially the stereotypes around addiction. It's really challenging.
One tragic story in your report was about a Métis woman. And it's great that there's also attention on the racism experienced by Métis as well as First Nations and Inuit, who actually experienced discrimination before she even got to the hospital.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I found them across the board. Like maybe someone's calling for emergency assistance to ambulance and others. And occasionally they'll call for that assistance and they'll end up getting a very different response. Like, you know, I've got individuals on the report. I talk about people who like get arrested or don't get the treatment or they're released, you know, because people say, well, you're overreacting to your conditions. There's nothing wrong with you. And then, you know, they come back to another hospital or come back the next day and find out that, you know, they had a broken bone or what have you. So it's really significant to like read these stories. And I picked the stories I told because they're valid, accurate stories, but also because at every point of care, like when you first walk in the door, when you're calling an EMT, et cetera, these racist stereotypes can really impact what happens next.
How many people did you hear from in the Downtown East Side specifically?
A fair number. And I was really concerned about what I heard there. And I was really concerned again about women who are particularly vulnerable and about women who had done survival sex work at one point in their lives and who had some multiple health issues, like chronic health conditions and need support. And, you know, they described an entire pattern of difficult behavior. And I know I do talk a little bit in the report about things like, you know, releasing women in the middle of the night to a cab to return to their homes in the Downtown East Side in what I consider to be unsafe, even though they've asked, like, can I just stay here till daylight? And I heard a lot from women. Women are really supporting other women in the Downtown East Side. And those services that help navigate health services are important. They were also a really good source of information about what happens when you go into emergency departments to get care.
Mm. Could you talk about there's one woman you talked to, a First Nations woman in the Downtown East Side, who actually went for a COVID-19 assessment and it went entirely awry.
Yeah, she has a chronic health condition and she needs to go to the hospital. Like she has a long-term, that was kind of like a seizure disorder. And so she's a very vulnerable person who needs medical care. And I included this because it also speaks to the fact that the pandemic and COVID-19 has made situations even worse. You know, she described to me that the only time she got good care was when she had a non-Indigenous person come as an advocate and speak for her. Then she felt she was treated fairly once. When she goes alone, she often gets treated badly. And she felt very strongly that there was something in her file. And in fact, you know, in her file was that sort of frequent flyer kind of language. But she was really scared about COVID and she expressed how scared she was to people. And sure enough, they temporarily detained her under the Mental Health Act and then took her to another hospital to get a psych assessment. And then she was eventually released without ever getting the COVID test.
Holy.
She was later able to get one through a clinic. But the point is, you know, she was terrified. And then a lot of very vulnerable people are now separated and have to go alone. And so the pandemic has definitely heightened anxiety. And the response, that doesn't seem to be a good awareness and understanding of how patients and how Indigenous people who have been had abusive interactions, that, you know, mocking people like that or, you know, downplaying what they're saying is really not helpful. Like they should be taken very seriously.
Before we close, I wanted to ask you about a few of your recommendations. The province has already done number one, which is apologize immediately, and has talked about appointing an assistant deputy minister specifically on Indigenous health. Why is that one important?
Well, it's important because there has to be clear leadership at the top. And so where decisions are made and where accountabilities are kept inside our systems, whether that's for complaints, for management of the system, general accountability, if there aren't Indigenous people at that level, and that they're empowered in decision-making, it it's not very likely that these issues will be vulnerable. So it was really important to me. It was also important because we need someone to champion Indigenous people in the system, because the Indigenous workers in the system are experiencing direct racism. So that is one thing, but I'd like to see all, you know, health authorities to have more Indigenous people coordinating it in leadership.
You also talk about patient complaint processes, and I guess that would also include health workers who receive racism, a speak up culture. Tell me what that means to you.
Yeah, I'd like to improve the complaints process. Like, a very easy thing is we don't really have a good definition of what quality care is. Like, you can review and ask for a review of your treatment based on quality. I would like quality to be defined to include receiving care free from all forms of discrimination. But yeah, I would like to see a speak up culture, which means the whistleblower legislation that we've had for about a year in BC, that it apply to the health worker sector so that they can bring things forward. There was a lot of fear of recrimination in the process. I mean, I was able to have a lot of conversations with people, but I did so on the basis that it was confidential and I kept everything confidential and outside of government. But it really spoke to the kind of fears. And so a speak up culture with proper whistleblower protection can help to ease that. And you shouldn't be doing your review and having to guarantee people confidentiality to address racism. It should be pretty ordinary that it comes forward and it's dealt with properly.
Do you have any last messages for listeners in the Downtown Eastside or East Vancouver for people who came forward?
Yeah, I just want to thank people who came forward and shared their stories. And I feel like I only touched a tip of them. Like, it was so important to get something out right away based on what I was hearing. I feel like we only touched a bit, but I really lift my hands up and thank them so much. And I want to encourage any person who needs care to get care, and that the system will change. And to be sure, if they're not getting the care that's respectful, if they're experiencing these stereotypes and discrimination, to raise it, to speak about it. We still do have a 1-800 line that we're going to run for a while until we have another process in place. And I don't want people to avoid care. And I think it's very important that we turn this situation around. And I'm so grateful for them stepping forward. And even though they were immensely nervous, talking to me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your report, as well as for the work you did.
Thank you very much. You take care.
And that was Mary Ellen Terpel-Lafon. She's a former provincial judge and formerly the representative for children and youth in BC. She now heads up the Indian Residential School Center for Dialogue at the University of British Columbia. And as mentioned, we are going to share a couple of numbers that you can call. If you need the Hope for Wellness helpline for First Nations and Inuit, you can call 1-855-242-3310 or hopeforwellness.ca. The Métis Crisis Line is also 24 hours. That's 1-833-638-4722. And you can also contact the 1-800 number for Mary Ellen Terpel-Lafon's investigation, and those reports will be kept confidential. That's 1-888-600-3078, 1-888-600-3078, or email addressing_racism@gov.bc.ca. In reaction to Terpel-Lafon's report, BC Health Minister Adrian Dix immediately apologized and said he would appoint the requested Assistant Deputy Minister of Indigenous Health to improve the systems. It's not enough for some First Nations leaders who said they want immediate action on accountability and working more closely with First Nations health leadership. Here is Adrian Dix speaking in the wake of the report.
Report in plain sight shows racism at an individual and systemic level. Racism that has made BC's healthcare system an unsafe place for many Indigenous people to access services and the care they need. Racism affects health outcomes, a fact that is clear in the testimony and detailed statistical evidence in the report. On page 35, for example, you'll find an Indigenous doctor's account of how they had refused to go seek treatment at hospital as a patient because they feared the racist and discriminatory treatment they'd receive. Or on page 29, Indigenous women left a specialty hospital against medical advice at a rate 11 times higher than other residents. Or the report's survey of responses, thousands of responses, which concludes amongst the survey participants that 84% of an Indigenous patients experience racism in the healthcare system, and 52% of Indigenous healthcare practitioners face racial prejudice. Racism is toxic for people, and it's toxic for care. I want to make an unequivocal apology as the Minister of Health to those who have experienced racism in accessing healthcare services in British Columbia now and in the past. I want to sincerely thank all those who participated for reaching out to tell us of your experiences. Hospitals and clinics must be places of trust and comfort, and all of us should have confidence that without a doubt, we will receive the respectful care that we all deserve. My apology today is an acknowledgement of the pain that Indigenous people have borne from racism. It is a first step, however. I will recommend to the Premier to sit down immediately to work out our government's response to meet the report's first recommendation and set us on a path to healing and reconciliation. This will be planned alongside First Nations and Métis partners. When I learned of allegations that there was a game being played in an emergency room to guess the blood alcohol level of patients, we set out to find and follow the facts of the investigation. And Dr. Terpel-Lafont and her team did just that. The facts of Dr. Terpel-Lafont's investigation did not lead us to evidence of a game occurring in BC's hospitals as originally depicted. It did lead us to the certainty that stereotyping, racism, and discrimination exists in our BC healthcare system. Systemic racism exists, it persists in our healthcare system, and it is damaging to the health and wellness of Indigenous people in our province, and in fact, I'd argue, to all people in our province. I want to say to you today that I'm 100% committed to making sure the healthcare system here in BC is providing safe, high-quality, accessible, and culturally safe care for all peoples in BC. And it is my determination that racism will have no place here. I'm committed to working hard on all of the changes outlined in this report, and I'm committed to doing that in partnership with Indigenous health and community leaders. I want to ensure that the structural and systemic changes that are recommended make a real and meaningful difference for any Indigenous individual who needs and seeks health services. As Dr. Terpel-Lafont said, the point of care is essential here. The Ministry of Health will work very closely with our First Nations health governance partners and Métis leadership to make positive change. As immediate steps, 5 new Indigenous health liaison positions are being added in each health authority, and I have directed the Ministry to review medical staff bylaws to implement consistent standards for cultural safety and humility as an expectation for medical staff privileges. It is important to emphasize, as in the report, that these recommendations build on the work, the commitments, and efforts of staff across the healthcare system to improve care for Indigenous people. But we all need to recognize and recommit to eradicating racism from our health system, to ensure that our beliefs and behaviors are anti-racist and based in cultural humility. The release of this report is not to blame or shame the people who have chosen a field of service in healthcare, but it is a call for us to actively do more as individuals and as a system. The situation as it exists and as is depicted in the details of this report cannot stand. This report does give us, the provincial health system, the opportunity to accelerate a comprehensive approach to address long-standing challenges of racism and the legacy of colonialism, rooted in principles of human rights. The advancement of these recommendations shall be grounded in the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act. At the core of our response will be action. Action to implement the recommendations. Action to ensure that Indigenous leaders are fully included in any response. Action to see that change happens.
And that was Health Minister Adrian Dix.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.